And welcome back to another episode of The Conspiracy Skeptic. I'm your conspiracy skeptic, Carl Maimer. And returning guest, one of my favorites, hope it's one of your favorites, Dr. David Perlmutter. You are a, and I always mess this up. You know, it's that.
Yes, you do.
Yeah.
You and I'm beginning to resent it, Carl, yes, after sorry. The 50th time. So.
I know.
I was just watching, before I introduce myself, I just wanted to say that we are re-watching our favorite situation comedy, Corner Gas, which has been described as the Seinfeld of Canada. And we love that show. And it's funny how one of the interesting things there is that in the middle of an episode of this situation comedy, the Prime Minister of Canada will show up and say a line.
Right. The actual Prime Minister.
Yeah, the actual Prime Minister. I think it was Stephen Harper was Prime Minister.
Okay,
and
right.
And then whoever was before him was also on the show. And then your Olympic gold medalist will show up.
Right.
You know, just jogging down the street of this small town in Saskatchewan. Some of your famous musical and acting performers will show up. And it's just, it's so interesting that all these famous people just drop in to the show, because I guess it was such a popular show. And I think this is what I think your show is. And so I am looking forward to the Prime Minister of Canada. He's going to be coming in 20 minutes, I believe, right?
Yeah. Well, I joke our new Prime Minister is Bert Convy, our new Prime Minister, Bert Convy.
You're going to have to explain that joke. I think a lot of people are not old enough to understand that joke.
Yeah.
I'm not old enough to understand that joke.
Yeah. You know, I was on, I did a kind of a thing about McPizza Bites for whatever Brian Thompson's.
Oh, The Great Mystery. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Brian Thompson's podcast, whatever happened to Pizza McDonald's. And so I did a thing about, you know, it's like big news. In Canada, we elected a new prime minister. Congratulations, Bert Convy. Bert Convy was just, he was like a game show host. I think he did like some dating shows or something. But you know, wide range of like shows, Bert Convy. But
anyway, I appreciate being here. My name is David Perlmutter, and I'm a professor at Texas Tech University, which is in West Texas.
Well, Lubbock,
Texas.
Bang, right. Bang.
And, you know, it is interesting how the geography of both of our countries, we are Saskatchewan and Alberta in some ways. We have a lot of oil. We have a lot of cattle, a lot of ranching, farming. So it's there is some parallel there to the land, although you're much more lush, and I think you get more rain than we do in West Texas. But anyway, I'm glad to be on the show. For 35 years, I've been studying media in different forms, mostly political communication and conflict in communication and culture. I love talking about games and TV and movies, but we've had some great conversations about the portrayal of conspiracies, skepticism, and also how conspiracy theories work, as now they are all interpolated by media, right? Yes. Or and transmitted by media, because in 1963, if you were skeptical about the John F. Kennedy assassination, unless you printed a newsletter in your basement, you really didn't have any access to media. I mean, unless you were already working for a newspaper, or you were owning a newspaper, or you were a politician, maybe, you basically got to talk to your friends at the library about your conspiracy. And of course, now we live in a world where anything that happens within 30 seconds, there's 50,000 conspiracy posts instantly.
Yes.
So. And we talked about your great books the last time we met, about your two books on conspiracies and your great encyclopedic compendiums. And so I appreciate being back on the show.
No problem. Yeah. Yeah. Further to that whole idea of you as you sort of were alluding, how conspiracies, you know, were high effort before, right? You either just bothered people at work, and that's as far as it got, or you had to publish a book, which was usually self-publishing was either a very difficult route, so you probably had to find some publisher. And so, yeah, but today, right, you just, I mean, publishing, you know, Amazon KDP, it's very easy to publish any crank idea. But at the same time, you know, you can just TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, you know, all of these things, and you just sort of push it out there. And so I think we were calling it, you know, low effort. It's low effort now. But we're also
is why I'm here. I want to talk about my grand theory of the universe and everything that will challenge, you know, evolutionary theory, maybe its right. impact on the world. I'm being facetious here, because people can't see my face. But we've talked before about how I feel we are in the low effort age.
Yes.
So I mean,
yes.
There was a Stone Age. There was a Bronze Age. And now we are in the low effort age. Yes. And our favorite conspiracies and cryptids and mysteries and, you know, Bermuda Triangle and ghosts and all these things that we love to talk about, we don't necessarily believe in. We lament that in yesteryear, there seemed to be a lot of work that went into conspiracy theories. And you'd have to do that work independently. You'd have to go to the library. You had to check out books. You'd have to, like, interlibrary loan. You'd have to, like, send away for government documents. Or you'd made up your own government documents, you know, which took a lot of work.
Yes, that's true.
Yeah. Well,
almost as much, if not more.
Yeah. But now, and we'll go back to Amazon KDP, because that's sort of in my realm of, like, ticking off the boxes of low effort. We are in a time where you really don't need that much work or effort to produce volumes and volumes of anything, literally anything, and certainly conspiracies.
Yeah.
And on Reddit, it's called copy pasta. It's from obviously from copy paste, where people are just sort of taking one thing and just reprinting it and saying, well, I heard this, or they don't even say I heard this. They're presenting it as their own original theory.
Right.
And I never thought I would lament the conspiracy theories of yesteryear and the conspiracy theorists of yesteryear or the cryptid believers of the past. But I do respect them. Because right. even though I disagreed with them, and we've talked about this before, I sort of understood why they were doing what they were doing, but I also respected that they put in that effort.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and it is starting to sort of permeate society. Bring it back to there was kind of a bit of a reason why I introduced my friend Brian Thompson up at the top. He he does a little podcast about, you know, finding McDonald's pizza, and he publishes a lot of, you know, things on Facebook and YouTube and that kind of stuff. And then he was, he found his, one of his images being used in what he was calling YouTube slop. So where it's like, almost like you pick a topic like 10 restaurants, you know, popular with Gen X that don't exist anymore. You get AI, you get, you know, ChatGPT to write it. You get the voice synthesizer to read it. And then you just get, you know, something else to pull together, just a bunch of semi-related images. Boom. And then throw it up on YouTube. And one of his images was used in the slop. So he noticed that whoever was publishing this, you know, they that's kind of their theme, right? They are, you know, they're doing pretty good business, sort of creating this AI slop. So he just basically sort of said, hey, my image is being used in your thing. Either, you know, take the video down, or send me a royalty check. So they kind of had to make the calculation, you know, this thing generates us about $100 a year. So they said, we'll give you $50. And he's like, that's $50 I never had before. Deal. So yeah. So it's filling up YouTube and TikTok and all sorts of the social media, this AI slop, which is
let me give an example. Yeah. Which actually was it wasn't the straw that broke the camel's back, but it's the one that I've become most interested and also most irate on. Okay. So, you know, algorithms follow us everywhere now. Yeah. They're like, you know, those old ghost stories, that adaptation of H.P. Lovecraft, the movie From Beyond,
right,
where there's this invisible world of monsters that's around us all the time.
Yeah.
We can't see it except if we have some sort of, you know, special ray or lens or something.
Yeah.
And well, algorithms follow us everywhere, even no matter which privacy settings we have on. So if you get on YouTube, it's going to think like, okay, what does David or what does Carl want to see? Right now. So for me, I am very interested in history, mm-hmm. right? And especially World War II history. And I have not, I actually am intending to do a quantitative study of this, but I just qualitatively, estimatingly, I think 30 to 40% of the YouTube World War II videos that I'm seeing are under the category of AI slop.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And there's a number of different aspects of that I find interesting. First, they sometimes create topics that aren't actual topics. So, for example, I give you a concrete example, and that those topics spill over elsewhere in the media world. So, for example, I think it was about 3 or 4 months ago, I started seeing these very bad, and we talk about low effort. I mean, if you go on Reddit Midjourney or DALL-E or Sora, people are doing some pretty amazing things now with AI video and photography. Like there's some pretty photorealistic images and now up to 25 seconds of video. But these are real AI slop, like no effort. Like somebody just said, show a picture of Nazis dancing, you know, or something like that. And that's it. That was like this one sentence prompt. But anyway, I started seeing the topic, these Nazi women prisoners were shocked what they found in America.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
And it would, and the level of slop was, I mean, there were German women in the German armed forces, mm-hmm. not as many as like in the Soviet armed forces, but there were German women who were like nurses. They were German. I mean, you know, file clerks. I mean, there weren't a lot of combat women.
Yeah.
But they were, and some were captured, but this would show like a blonde woman with stereotypical Bavarian braids wearing a red t-shirt with a swastika, which I don't think the average German, you know, woman prisoner in 1945 was wearing like red cut off t-shirts, you know, big swastikas there. In fact, the t-shirt swastika was probably not that popular in the Third Reich. I mean, they wore it as armbands and things, but, you know, as an actual t-shirt, maybe. I think that's a Western, Europe, later American thing for American Nazis. But anyway, so then I started seeing more and more of these videos. And now you have to be careful because YouTube, I believe, counts a view if people watch 30 seconds of video.
Okay.
So I refuse to watch more than 29 seconds of these videos, but the first 29 seconds are just these weird AI images of like, I'm not making up, like dancing Nazi blonde women in Nazi t-shirts,
right,
like getting off a boat that does looks like a sailing ship and getting off and like meeting George Washington or something, right, like that. Just insane images where you think like, A, nobody who knows anything about World War II and nobody who was paying attention to the video, if anybody was paying attention to the video, cared.
Yeah.
Low effort, right?
Yeah.
And then I started seeing a lot more of these videos, and I would see 70,000 views, 75,000 views, clickbait, mm-hmm, but somebody sat through for more than 30 seconds.
Wow. Yeah.
Then I would notice on Reddit, World War II history, Reddit World War II information, Reddit Ask History, people, right, say, so what was the reaction of Nazi women who were captured? So we got to remember that most people who are looking at topics are not so knowledgeable that they can't be fooled. So I'm thinking, oh my gosh, the young people who think that like it was an actual phenomenon of dancing blonde Nazi women who were captured and then were sent to Dog River, Saskatchewan, and, you know, went to the Dewey McLeod concert in Saskatoon. I mean, just insane stuff. But as you said, low cost,
yeah,
low effort, modest profits, and they don't care.
Yeah.
And it is sweeping. And now the part that, I mean, I don't mind if somebody does slop in their basement. And I don't even mind if somebody comes to the local farmer's market and puts up a stall to sell bad art. And I don't even mind if like a museum puts up bad art. It's okay. Yeah. That's fine with me. But I think what happens, though, is that the slop crowds out the good curated artisanal content. And it makes, I think, eventually people will not want to watch anything. I think YouTube is hurting itself by allowing this to happen.
Yes.
But yes. And World War II, YouTube, fantastic example of what we're talking about.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, that's a thing, right? Like you're sort of saying, you know, each video may generate $100 a year in income, but these people, you know, they have 200, 500 videos, you know, so they are making pretty good money, you know, collectively. I mean, I'm thinking of a guy I sort of read about, and I wouldn't call this slop because it took him actual effort, but he makes songs, happy birthday songs about your name. Every possible name is constantly generating. Happy birthday, Carl. You are so amazing. Have a great day, Deet. Right? Okay. And so, you know, you want to wish me a happy birthday, you will link me to that goofy little semi-catchy, right? And that guy makes huge bank by people just, you know, linking that. And you're like, oh, that's sort of funny. My name set a nice little jingle. Yeah. And more like, hey, more power to him, you know. Or there are people out there that do like just little tiny, I don't know, like music, sort of like, I think they call them breaks or something. Just little tiny bits of music, which then people can go out and kind of download and then put into their produced music. And again, you get, you know, if that song hits, you know, the top 40, you get a producer credit. You know, you get an Emmy, or not an Emmy, sorry, a Grammy. You know, yeah, it's. So there is kind of a legitimate business out there making effort and making little things and earning pennies on, you know, money in aggregate. But
the one thing I want to interject, though, is that technically nobody has to pay them a dollar.
Right.
Because the Copyright Office of the United States has ruled that AI produced anything is not copyrightable.
Yes.
So, yes, like in your friend's example, if an AI video uses and you know, this is why Disney is suing ChatGPT. Like, you know, if you're using a trademarked character, a copyright, text from a copyrighted book and so on, And there have been some findings of like actual liability. I think there were a couple of European countries, you know, that have just said every artist in the entire country has to be paid a certain amount by ChatGPT because of copyright issues. But if you produce AI anything, you don't have to pay. Nobody has to pay you because you cannot. You do not own the copyright.
Exactly.
And I think this might be. I mean, this may be the snake eating its own tail. I hope it does anyway. Is that, I mean, if somebody wanted to go through the medium effort of taking all 500, you know, AI produced videos of some company and just repost them on their channel.
Yeah.
Technically, I mean, I don't know how it actually would work if you filed with YouTube a copyright violation.
Yeah.
Did YouTube, you know, pay attention to the copyright law or interpret it differently? That's up to them. But see, that is a problem for the people. I hope it's a problem for the people who are producing AI slop there. But it is interesting in our space of science, conspiracies, skepticism. I was just on a podcast. It's a really good true crime podcast. Crawl Space, that they do a really good job. They're people I reached out to years ago because like your podcast, I refer to students to them about people who do really good curated, artisanal, a lot of research, you know, high value, high effort podcasts, right? I think yours is, your friends at Monster Talk is, and things like that. And we can name our list, top 10 list of high effort, high value podcasts. And I was saying how the true crime space was being invaded by very low effort podcasts because with the software now, I can say, oh, you know, please give me a script for a 40-minute narration for a podcast about the Black Dahlia murder in Los Angeles. And I also want a upper-class British narrator.
Yeah.
And I've got it.
Boom.
You know, and then I put it on the air, and it's going to be the Wikipedia entry. You know, it's going to be like it's going to be full of errors.
Yeah.
Because as we know, the internet is wrong half the time.
Yeah.
So let's remember what large language learning models do. They're basically scooping up all of this data. And so they ChatGPT, for example, has everything that's on the internet up to a certain date.
Right. Yeah.
And it has everything that's on Facebook up to a certain date. I don't know how far behind it is, but anyway. But we know that the average of Facebook does not equal reality. Right?
Yeah.
It's just what people have posted. It's not like a group of physicists got in a room and like voted.
Yeah.
So now, for example, let's go to skepticism and conspiracy. I'm seeing all of these videos because yet another object has entered the solar system.
Oh, my God. Yes.
Yes. Yes. And I know you've done shows before with our, I'm forgetting his name, but that great.
Stuart. Astronomer Royale. Stuart Robbins.
Yeah, yeah. He doesn't do his show anymore, does he?
He's got a real job, you know. He's super busy. Also, one of those things, too. It's like, you know, I think now when you're working for NASA legit and you're publishing, you don't want to necessarily quite be associated with like a, you know, with a like a skeptical podcast or skeptical blog and stuff like that. Yeah.
Well, anyway, so another object has entered the solar system. And as you might imagine, if you go on YouTube, you can see these videos. Scientists are shocked. Scientists are flabbergasted. Scientists are amazed. Scientists are lying, whatever. I mean, there's hundreds of videos on how this is actually an alien craft, and something amazing is going to happen.
Yes.
Now, I'm going to go. We are recording today on November 1st, right? It's November 1st in the United States of America. I don't know what date it is in Canada. You guys have your own system, right? But I'm going to go out on a limb. November 1st, you know, doing predictions. That object entering the solar system is not going to turn out to be Rama. It's not going to turn out to be an alien ship.
Yes, good reference.
I'm just going to make that prediction. I'm going to go, you know, blow all my credibility by saying it's not going to be an alien ship. You know what's going to happen. It's nothing's going to happen. And then they'll quietly move on. The videos are going to stay up there. Yes. They made their money. And then the next object will come through the solar system.
Oh, yeah.
And they'll post some more videos. But now, again, in the old, good old days, these guys would at least have to put in some effort. Mm-hmm. But now they can just take the old video and just change a few things.
Yes.
And repost it every couple of months when some new object enters the solar system.
It's right. It's the same script. What I find interesting too is it's like NASA has an image of it, but it's a white blob, but they go out in AI and it looks like a Star Destroyer, you know, and it's like, oh my God, is that what thing that's entering our solar system? And nowhere in anything do they show you the image, you know, NASA has of it, which is like a white blob, you know, which
does. Yes, but you know, a guy in his mother's basement in Saskatoon has access to better photo imagery technology than NASA. We all know that.
This is true.
Right?
Yeah. I mean, one of the things I sort of find with, you know, my skeptical book of lists, it's that any list I do, you know, I'm like, you know, 10, I'm blanking on the own lists I do, like, you know, like 10, 10 haunted dolls, 10, you know, I always have like three in my mind, you know, I know three that are kind of fun and goofy, but, you know, I need more, right? So, you know, I start to search on haunted dolls and stuff like that. And I'll get some more. But if it, like, you know, I have two lists in a row that are seven, you know, a list of seven something. I don't want three sevens in a row. So I want to find, you know, one more, eight or a couple more, nine haunted dolls. So sometimes I'll go to ChatGPT and I'll say, can you give me a list of haunted dolls? And, you know, and I'll start listing, you know, the ones I know and I've already kind of covered. And then it'll spit out like three or four, like, I've never heard of this one. And they're quite interesting and juicy. And then you go and you research this, you know, haunted doll. There's nothing. It comes up nothing on any kind of search or, you know, Usenet search or anything like that. And then you come back to ChatGTP and you, can you give me a link for that? And then, you know, and I'll go up searching and now ChatGTP will go like, it turns out that there is no such doll. Like, it'll just admit like, no, I'm just, you know, no, what I said wasn't true at all, which is totally bizarre.
And that is very, again, I completely acknowledge it. And I'm doing some of my current research is on AI, and I've got three papers published, and I'm actually working on four more. I'm very interested in the phenomena. And it is multiple phenomenon of ChatGPT AI, and there's a lot of stuff going on. And of course, the technology is changing as we speak. So, you know, I understand that you shouldn't ridicule railroads in 1892, and you shouldn't ridicule how bad planes are in 1912. We don't know where the technology is going to go. But right now, it is incredibly unreliable. And let me give you to break down exactly what you were talking about. So I have access to the ChatGPT Pro version. Okay. Not the free version, but the Pro version. I mean, they call it Pro, but you know, it's more expensive basically. And one of the things that I find interesting is that this is supposed to be like the research version.
Yes.
like the deep version, yeah. Right?
The PhD level, I think they're boasting about it.
Yeah, I mean, I think you would be fired and lose your tenure, both if you were at this level of incompetence. But so I would say in 100% of the searches where I've done a test search, I've said, like, give me 10 articles. Oh, okay, I'm going to give real examples.
All right.
Okay, so I was interested, one of the conspiracy theory, you know, it falls into the broad realm of like conspiracy theory, is that pre-Columbian contact between the New World, what we call the Americas today, and the Old World, Asia, Africa, Polynesia, especially Europe, right? Yeah. So, as you know, there are many theories that there were other people who, before Columbus, we have physical evidence of one
group, Vikings.
Vikings. Yeah. There is one site, Ancelmedo, I believe it's called there.
I can't pronounce it.
Yeah, there are other hints in Newfoundland. You know that we know that Vikings actually did land in this place called Vinland. You know, and they settled there for a little bit. There was some contact. Okay, so we have that.
Yeah.
N equals one. Now, we also have going south. We have, I think, and I'm not an anthropologist, but I've read the papers. We have N equals two. That there was at least one, maybe two contact events between Polynesia and Central and South America.
Okay.
And that there was like in 1200 or 1400, I mean, there was some, I guess, a really intrepid canoe of Polynesians that not only landed in South Central America and, but also like came back, which is to me more amazing than like drifting over there in the first place. And we have genetic evidence of Polynesian and exchange.
Okay.
You know, so we have some evidence there, right?
Yeah.
Actual scientific evidence. Again, this is the kind of thing where it drives us nuts sometimes with conspiracy theorists, is they say, well, you know, scientists are covering up the evidence. And I go, and we think like, no, immediately when scientists find evidence, they publish it. And win accolades, you think that they would cover up? Here are two instances where scientists, the first thing they did when they found evidence and confirmed it by a scientific method was they did what scientists do. They published it. And there it is for you to read in the literature.
Right.
So why would you think that scientists are okay with publishing contact with Polynesia and okay with contact with Norse people, but are covering up Irish monks, are covering up, you know, West African explorers, are covering up 700 other contacts, right?
Right.
But here's going back to ChatGPT. I found five articles and I found the citations within those articles. And then I went to ChatGPT and I said, is there evidence of contact between Polynesia and peoples and New World peoples, America's peoples, you know, in the scientific literature.
Right.
And it gave me seven papers, including five that I'd found.
Okay.
And then two, which, to use a younger person's word, seemed really sus.
Okay.
Like they were like the Journal of Polynesian Contact with the New World. Now, I'm going to go out on a limb and say nobody has devoted an entire journal to that topic yet. It's not that giant a topic, you know, in terms of evidence.
I feel like the Bigfoot woman who did the De Novo journal, I think she's maybe her publishing house maybe branching out.
Yeah, you know, that's another part of the low effort world is you create your own publishing, you know, self-publish and then say, look, it's in print, you know, my sources, here's my source, you know, Journal of Carl Mamer Studies. You know,
exactly.
Volume one, issue one.
If it's edited by my wife, let's not even go there.
Your dog is the assistant editor for fact checking there.
Yeah, exactly. There.
But anyway, so then I pushed back and I said, okay, well, I have confirmed that these five articles are correct. Yeah. These are actual articles published in actual journals. But I think these two you made up. And now this is what's interesting is that I have a setting turned on.
Okay.
So I can see what ChatGPT is quote unquote thinking. Like it's going through its process of giving me an answer. So it will say something like user challenging, creating explanation, admitting error, formulating response, apologizing. we know that it's not an actual thought process, but it's algorithmic logic trail.
Okay. Interesting.
When it's called out on
right,
something.
Right, yeah. Okay.
And sure enough, it did admit to me that, yes, those are not actual journals and actual findings. Now, the mystery, which, I mean, you can go online and you can see an interview with the president of Microsoft, and he said, I mean, this is a year ago, maybe he's changed his mind, but he said, we may never solve the problem of hallucination with AI.
Okay.
Why AI makes up facts to please us? Is that what it's really thinking? Like to please us? Why does it make up some facts versus other facts?
Right.
Why will it be, you know, 100% correct in one thing, but 75% and 72% in others?
Yeah.
But the point is, in order to use AI effectively, what I tell my students is you have to be high effort.
Yeah.
You cannot be low effort. You will produce crap.
Yeah.
Artistic crap, journalistic crap, scientific crap, podcasting crap. Sorry for using the word that often, but slop, I guess, is a more polite word. Unless you put in the high effort. But most people, let's face it, they go to AI for low effort. That's that's their go-to for low effort. They don't want to work harder, you know.
Yes.
It's like a professor telling students, like, if you want to get a higher grade, work harder. That's not a good answer for some students. They accept that. For other students, that's a tough. They don't want to hear that answer. I didn't want to hear that answer when I was 18. You know, my professor, I said, why did I get a low grade on this paper? Both my parents were professors, so I should have never asked this question. And this was a very old fashioned professor. He said, because you did terrible work, you should work harder and do better. That was a good answer. That was a good point he made. I at 18, I didn't want to accept that.
Yeah.
You know, now a little older, I do accept that.
In my brief tenure as a teacher, I have found that, you know, the amount of effort you should put in to do the job right, to get the answer correct, is less effort than people are willing to spend arguing with the teacher that they shouldn't have to do that. You know, it's like, you know, if you, that was 20 minutes more of effort, we've just spent 30 minutes on this. Yeah.
Yeah. We're still at the stage where I think human intercession, intervention, interdiction is necessary with AI. And I'll give you another example, which I think our friends in the non-skeptical world keep doing all the time, is checking just something really simple that academics have to do a lot of work on.
Yeah.
And we have to have citations. If we submit to a journal or we write a book, we have to put our citations in a particular format.
Yeah.
Chicago manual style, American Psychological manual style, I mean, American Chemical Association manual style. And that is a pretty tedious job that most professors, if they can do it, delegate to a graduate student.
Yes.
Now, ChatGPT, I would say, has a pretty good 80% rate of, if I say, here are 100 citations in MLA format, convert them to APA format, it will do 80% of the work.
Right.
But the problem is, I don't know which 80%. right?
Yeah.
So I still have to hand, which is fine. I know I'm going to have to do it, but I will still hand I check every single letter and kern and, you know, apostrophe.
Yeah.
And I think it has saved me time to do it that way.
Yeah.
Because the error rate is low enough. But again, the theme of our show is low effort.
Yes.
I am seeing more and more scientific papers published where it's obvious they just said, hey, ChatGPT, mm-hmm. create my bibliography. Okay.
Yeah.
And there's lots of errors there.
Yes. I mean, now, also legal briefs is another one where,
yes,
where, you know, yeah, where lawyers are using it. And it's like, the you know, those cases don't exist.
Yes. And there are court cases now, which are being thrown out, you know, yeah. lawyers who are being censured. In the United States, we had a controversy where some judges were alleged to have used ChatGPT to write their opinions.
Yes.
You know, I sort of sympathize with like a struggling 18-year-old,
right?
Desperate because they put off writing their paper. You know, I remember being 18 vaguely. You know,
right. Let me. But yeah, not us, because we are too old and we are too married and we're too happy in our relationship. But I don't know if you have a daughter, but I have a daughter and she's like 15. And this is the scary thing we have to worry about our daughters, is that, because a lot of kids, you know, first thing they do is meet on some chat thing, right? So she meets a boy, you know, from school, but they start chatting and he's charming and witty and eloquent. And then she meets him for a coffee date and he's monosyllabic, single word answers. And I'm like telling my wife, he just used ChatGTP. Like,
yeah.
And women, you know, in the dating scene are beginning to find this now, that, you know, they're like, oh, this guy's really smart. You know, he can carry on a conversation. He uses big words, he spells things correctly. For you people out there, men who are out there are single, the bar is actually very low. If you can, you know, string together some sentences and don't use like letters to replace words, and, you know, it's opens the door for you. But yeah, so yeah, this is another thing we got to kind of worry about, is that, you know, people using ChatGTP in chat to convince people they are something they are not in terms of knowledge and personality and things.
That's a fantastic example of this other realm of we keep saying ChatGPT, and of course we got to remember
a lot
of other programs, but it's okay. It's like Kleenex, you know, it's
become exactly.
generic for the product, the commodity. So you just opened up a giant, you know, dune sized worm can there. So yes. So issue number one is that we are seeing the rise of something we studied in our field for a long time. I mean, when I first came into media and communications, mass communications, it was called, we studied parasocial relationships.
Right. Okay.
So yes. Back in the 70s, soap opera villainesses, you know, they would be the evil villainess who broke up other people's marriages in the daily soap opera. They would get on Johnny Carson and talk about how they were at the supermarket and some woman assaulted them with a rutabaga, because how could you break up Jill and Tom's marriage? Yeah. They were so happy. I'm an actress. I'm just a good actress.
Exactly.
You know? So people would have, or, you know, people would be in love with Robert Redford or Meryl Streep or something like that. Okay. But now we have parasocial relationships with ChatGPT, mm-hmm. which are hugely on the rise.
Yeah.
Now, there's a whole can of worms of dangers here. Chad, these programs, as we just talked about, I think part of the basis of hallucinations is they want to please us. That's not actually the thinking process. I'm using an anthropomorphic shorthand by saying please, but they want us to be a satisfied customer. Let's put it that way.
Yes. Use them again and again.
Yeah. So now if you go on Apple or Android, and you will see thousands of programs, but you can also use the main ones. Like ChatGPT, you can put on the friendly companion setting. And you can sit there for hours saying, you know, I really hate this guy I know. Oh, yeah, you're right. He sounds like a jerk. And, you know, this woman I met doesn't understand me. Oh, yeah, why would, you know, you're such a great guy. Or you're the most beautiful woman in the world. I don't understand why he dumped you. You know, it's the opposite of a psychologist. A good psychologist, just like a good doctor or a good accountant or, you know, tax preparer, you know, will tell you what you need to know, not necessarily what you want to hear. But these programs will tell you what you want to hear.
Yes.
Now, I think we actually talked about this in an early show we did. I was mentioning how the rise of freely accessible porn on the internet was having serious consequences for marriages, especially young marriages.
Yes.
Because a lot of young men who up through the 80s and 90s had very restricted access to pornography now have unlimited access to pornography. Yeah. And that's affecting their views of what women should be and should do.
Yes, exactly.
Well, now we have, I think, an analog of pornography where, and of course, with now ChatGPT, the Sam Altman has said they're going to create basically an X-rated version of ChatGPT where you can do this.
Right.
I won't fill in the blank, but you know, you can imagine what it is. Well, that's setting up relationships, right?
Right. Yeah.
Like standards of relationships.
Yeah.
So it goes both ways. Yes. I think like a young woman who's texting with a guy, I'll put that in quotes today, should be a little suspicious that he sounds like Romeo from Romeo and Juliet, you know, proclaiming his emotions and love and depth and how, he you know, read Little Women and Pride and Prejudice and was moved to tears and, you know,
exactly.
And then when they meet, he's like, yeah, man, I like Halo Call of Duty. That's about it. You know, there's a problem there, but then the reverse is also the problem when the expectation is that every relationship will be this endless outpouring of love and validation.
Yes. Right. Yes. I mean, back in the, you know, the day when I was sort of in the, you know, the dating pool and, you know, you would chat when I would meet a woman, we'd go for dinner and stuff like that. I could hold up my end of the conversation.
Yes. You have to explain this to a younger audience.
No, okay.
Like, this is like a physical meeting.
Yes. Yes.
Between two humans.
Exactly.
What do they do?
Yeah. So you make a plan with a woman and you say,
yes,
let's go to this restaurant.
A real woman.
Yeah. 7 p.m. Saturday, and you show up, you know, look for the guy wearing, you know, a white shirt and a nice tie. Right. And then, you know, because it's a nice restaurant, you're meeting her and then you talk. And this is very important. You ask her questions about herself. Oh, what do you do for a living? That's fascinating. You know, tell me more. You know, what's the hardest part of your job? Ask her questions. And again, low bar. And then when the dinner is over, you pay. Okay. And then you go, I had a lovely time. And you go your separate ways. Okay. But anyways, but during that time, again, you have to talk, right? But before you meet the woman and without using AI, you know, you're in chat, right? She says something in chat, you have a second to think about what you want to say. We've all been in that situation where it was like, if I had just an extra second, I would have said this. It would have been the wittiest thing ever, right? Chat always gave you that just that extra second, like, you know, don't say that, backspace, 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 you know? And yeah. And so, so a lot of women kind of did find that, you know, when they would meet a guy, he was, because he had that half second or that second, he was, could be very articulate. But then when he was kind of like, didn't have.
Live.
The, yeah, live.
There was no delay. You and I are old enough to remember in radio,
yes,
and television, even live programming, you'd have a 7-second delay.
Yeah, exactly.
Just in case something went wrong.
Yeah.
Like somebody said, like on network television, CBC or NBC, right? Somebody
yes.
said a curse word.
Yes.
They had 7 seconds to blank, beep, beep it out.
Exactly.
Right?
I worked in radio, so yeah. It was called a yeah. dump button.
Yes.
Boom,
yes.
You hit that dump button.
Yeah.
You know, like, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, there was technology gave us a technology always gave us a little bit of play, but yeah, but now AI is just
it's giving us
universe.
False,
yes,
false confidence.
False confidence.
That's plus, good, yeah. also false eloquence.
Yes,
that is a problem. If we and now if our total goal is to just have a parasocial relationship, it's like okay. If all you want to do is just chat with ChatGPT the rest of your life,
right.
Get married to ChatGPT, have virtual children with ChatGPT, you know, like have they have grandchildren. I mean, I guess that's possible now. If that's your only goal, well, it's technologically feasible and
yeah.
probably will be even more so as the
yes.
years come. If you want to have an actual relationship with a real human, I would say that the large language learning model programs are getting in the way. They're not helping you.
Yeah.
They're bad physical therapy.
Yeah.
They're making it your injury worse.
I mean, one of the nice things about ChatGTP, again, but using that as like Kleenex, a generic, in the same way I used kind of Wikipedia, but even Wikipedia can be cut, you know, very dense in some topics. So like if I'm doing a list about, you know, 10 unsolved math problems, they don't make any sense to me whatsoever. If you jump into Wikipedia, it doesn't make any sense. But if you put into like ChatGPT, you know, can you explain the Riemann hypothesis to me like in 10, right? Even though it may be inaccurate, again, this is just like back in math. You know, you're usually first kind of told a lie, and then you know next year you're like, yeah, we kind of told you a lie. It's not that way, but it helps you with the concept. So ChatGPT will kind of give you the right concept. You know, I'm thinking like the Monty Hall problem. You know. Monty Hall opens one of the doors, so you stick with your door or switch, and you'd always switch. And that's really hard to understand. But then someone said, okay, look at it this way. When Monty Hall opens one of the doors, it's like the probability of all the other doors are compressed into that one remaining door. Again, not true, but once someone explained to me that way, I'm like, ah, yes, I could now delve into the whole Monty Hall problem and come to understand it much better. So yeah, ChatGPT can be great for that, but don't think it's ever the final arbiter of truth.
Yeah, so our theme is low effort.
Yes.
And that's my concern. So let's go to something else you brought up earlier, and then power swivel,
okay.
into conspiracy theories. So you brought up self-publishing, KDP,
yes.
Amazon. And so now we live, I mean, again, we used to live in a world where if you wrote a 200,000 word fantasy novel, you would have to convince a publisher.
Yeah.
I mean, unless you want to just like sneak into the office and Xerox it, you know, after you typed it and like hand it out to your friends, you would have to convince a publisher. Or there was self-publishing. Like you could pay somebody to print 1,000 copies and then you mail them to your 1,000 friends. But now we have almost unlimited, almost free
right.
ability for somebody to put on the internet, Amazon, other places, copies of their work, whatever their work, their Bigfoot book, their Bigfoot, you know, romance book, or, you know, their fantasy epic or so on. So what I'm noticing, if you go to Amazon and just scroll through the self-published fantasy category.
Yeah.
Okay. And then if you go to Reddit, where people post like, this is the book cover for, this is my, I'm trying, they promote themselves. I just wrote this fantasy epic and I'm just looking at the cover. Now, you and I are old enough in the media business to know covers matter.
Yeah.
Right. Especially now in the era of the bookshelf, especially if it's like an author you've never heard of, you might be intrigued enough by a cover to buy a book. But still in the age of Amazon, the first thing you're going to see, even before the title,
right.
is the cover
yes.
picture. And then you might read the title, and then you'll, unless you're looking for Stephen King. Most of these people are not Stephen King. I'm not Stephen King. You're not Stephen King. You're looking at the only information you have, since the author's name is irrelevant. You don't know who this person is.
Right.
You're looking at the cover and you're looking at the title. Okay. So we know, and I think anybody working for Amazon will tell you, a bad cover, a low effort cover will hurt you.
No.
A bad title or a low effort title will hurt you.
Yeah.
Okay. But I would argue the cover is even more important because let's face it, there's only so many clever titles out there.
Yeah.
I mean, especially in the fantasy epic world,
yeah.
there's only so many variations of like the Sword of Zoltan, you know, or
right,
you know, the Rise, the Elves of Frickolas. I mean, there's just only so many clever titles you can possibly have. So the cover itself matters.
Yeah.
And what I have seen is this incredible explosion of AI covers that are not only AI, but they are, again, incredibly low effort.
Right.
If you go to Reddit Midjourney, which is a visually oriented program,
right.
or you look at the websites where people who work in AI are trying to show off the best of their work,
right.
you'll see some really pretty amazing images, photorealistic images, you know, just they're doing some really interesting, good
yeah.
work. I don't see that being used for the covers of books.
Yeah.
Because, and I guess this is the theory, because I've actually had some mostly friendly, but sometimes not friendly exchanges where people, there's websites like Reddit will say, here are 7 covers for my book. Tell me which one you like. Right.
Right.
And I will see a cover. I don't know how to. Okay. It's a nondescript vague dragon shape and a vague young man shape holding a vague sword shape next to a vague volcano shape.
Right.
And it's called, like, you know, Sword of the Dragon.
Yeah.
Now, respectfully, I don't think that cover helps sell that book.
Right.
By vague, I mean like purple and yellow, you know, no features, no details, nothing that tells me this book is going to be different than the other 100,000
right.
KDP titles that were put up that day, let alone that year, right?
Yeah.
It's not helping you with your book. But these people resist this. They say, well, I don't have money to pay a designer. Yes, you do. You know, work a little harder, you know, do Uber or something, earn $1,000, $500, go to a local art community college, find a really talented young art student,
yeah.
design student, pay them.
Yes.
To make a nice cover
yeah.
of your book. But there's just like low effort has become a religion. That's my.
Yes.
My argument, Carl, that I want people to take away from this
yeah.
is that I believe people are not just doing low effort because it's easy.
Yeah.
I think they're obstinately and sullenly proclaiming this the era of low effort, and low effort is their God. Is that controversial?
Yeah. I mean, the nice thing about Amazon, and it hurt me at first, but now I appreciate it, is like the Amazon algorithm, right? So if you just put up KDP slop on Amazon, you know, Sword of the Dragon, and then someone came along and like put it, I'm looking for fantasy, swords, dragons. Even though your book hits all those key terms, your book is going to be on page, you know, 1,000 of the search results, right? Same thing with my book. Like if you put in, when I first started publish my book, if you put in, you know, book of lists, even though, you know, the skeptic's book of lists, even the book of lists was a hard match, my book was like way nowhere. But as, you know, as I did the grunt work and would promote my book and my podcast and other people's podcasts and got some, you know, local press and yada, 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 and then got reviews and good reviews and stars and stuff like that. Now I start to come up much higher in the search results. So if you put in like book of lists, there's a very good chance page one, page two, you'll see the skeptic's book of lists, right? So you can publish slop, like, your conspiracy book or some, you know, bodice ripping, you know, semi porn or something like that. But Amazon is never going to show it. You know, you have to go out and you still have to go out and do the hard work, the high effort, right? Which is the reason, the nice thing about going to the publishing company is they do that effort for you. They bother people. Like I'm always getting email from publicists saying, hey, you know, my author, my, you know, has just written a book about, you know, the moon being, you know, a hologram. And do you want to, can he come on your show? Completely not understanding.
I find it interesting that these people can afford a publicist.
That crap sells, right? So yeah, I don't.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah.
I mean, especially in America, I've in Canada, it's like if I went to publishers and like I got the skeptic's book of lists, no one is going to talk to me. But in America, you probably can find a legit publisher. You know, down in Missouri, you know, we publish 3 books a year. You know, we sell, 5,000 copies each, but we're legit. We get into catalogs and we can get into libraries and da, 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 da. Yeah.
Well,
I hesitate to say America is the land of opportunity, but there's something there. Well,
we probably have more per capita, a lot more presses.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
And those presses vary in quality. They also vary in budgets.
Yeah.
I sympathize because I'm an author. I've published 10 books. Right. I published a book with Oxford University Press, with Harvard University Press, with St. Martin's, and all of them did a good job. I do think it is true. I'm not 100% disagreeing with you. I'm like partially disagreeing with you. Most publishers today, even the high end publishers, expect you to do a lot more self-publicity,
right,
unless you're in like a certain A category of author. Right. And the people who are, this is what gets me, is if you're going to, for these young people who are writing these books, if you're going to put low effort into your cover, low effort into your title, my gosh, they're putting low effort into their typeface, you know?
Right.
Low effort into, and then of course, I see, that's the thing. To me, a low-effort cover, a low-effort title, low-effort typeface signifies probably low-effort content.
Right, yeah.
Then you probably are not going to sell many copies, right?
Yeah.
Now, you look at authors who are doing it right.
Right.
It's a full-time job to be an author. And I'm going to take probably the most famous living example of this, and that's Brandon Sanderson.
Okay.
Now, Brandon Sanderson, I think he rivals George R. R. Martin for number of copies sold.
Okay.
He certainly is like everybody's role model of of an author. I'm not talking about a writer.
Okay.
I mean, he writes a lot. He writes fantasy novels. Okay. And they're all bestsellers. Every single one starts out like number one, New York Times bestseller.
Okay.
He is described as one of the nicest people. I don't know if he's Canadian, but he comes off as like the stereotype of like the super nice Canadian. If you just watch him do an interview, he never says anything negative about people. His books are pretty clean. Like people have talked about, like, if George R. R. Martin doesn't finish the Song of Ice and Fire, like, they should hire Brandon. Because they did.
Robert Jordan did
not finish Wheel of Time. The last two books were written by Brandon Sanderson. Okay. Brandon Sanderson says, no, I won't do it because he's got the sex scenes and the violence I won't go as far as him. And he says, that's not criticism. It's just like, he does that. I don't do that. But then also, he's everywhere. He's on every social media platform. He will do an interview with anyone who asks him.
Right.
He goes to every con. He signs every autograph. He'll stop in the hallway and take a selfie with you. He is like every publisher's dream and every fan's dream of an author.
Right. Yes.
And by the way, I'm not like, I tried reading two or three of his books, and he's just not my taste, but I admire. So in other words, he's not my taste as a writer, but I admire him as a maximum effort in every category author.
Okay.
Right. And so it seems to me that if you're selling a book of conspiracy or you're selling a book of fantasy dragons, you have to look at what the gold standard or the platinum, you know, titanium standard is.
Right.
Of doing that. And so circling back to conspiracy theories, I think that low effort now is ending up, I think conspiracy theorists believe, I don't have a lot of conspiracy theorists in my daily life that I have conversations with. So I'm more like reading websites, right? And I think they think they're winning because of the quantity of how much is out there, right? So like anytime any news event happens, instead of there being a lag of 2 or 3 years for people to write their book about this assassination was a conspiracy, we have 100,000 posts and reposts, copypasta, 100,000 low effort posts on it's got to be a conspiracy because of this. And then they make something up or they rewind something. And I'm going to give an example in a moment. But I think just like it's hurting fantasy fiction, I think this is actually hurting conspiracy theories.
Right. Yeah.
Because it's like it's reducing them to just this tidal wave of slop instead of focusing on high quality effort.
Yeah.
I also think it's going to reduce the amount of money that anybody can make from peddling conspiracy theories. I don't see how you can sell a book nowadays. Like if somebody came out and said, I wrote a book on this assassination attempt and how it was a conspiracy. I mean, I guess the Kennedy conspiracy books probably still, there's a certain number of like people over 70 who are going to buy those.
But yeah.
But I don't understand how you could make a dollar selling a book on a modern conspiracy because there's a billion internet posts.
Yeah.
Why would anybody pay for it?
You definitely have to think of a good angle or something new. I think of like Bigfoot, right? If you just wrote a Bigfoot book, yeah, great, another one, put it on the stack, right? But someone made the action, and again, this is coming back to high effort. Someone's like, you know what? No one's really ever been able to pinpoint where the Gimlin Patterson film was actually shot. There's a lot of different ideas, but no one's come. Yeah. So he went out and, you know, figured out exactly where that thing was shot, you know, wrote a book. It was, you know, and that was, you know, a good book, you know, found a good angle and yeah.
That was written a little while ago though, wasn't it?
A number of years ago, I'm sure. But
yeah.
Yeah. Obviously, you know, before Slop, but as an example of, like, I mean, even before that book was written, you know, there are a billion Bigfoot books, you know, written already, many self-published, you know. So yeah, I mean, finding an angle, but
Well, this is something I know you've brought up before in your show without me, and you've brought up in discussions with the great people over at Monster Talk, and they brought it up too, is that the Patterson-Gimlin film, just to remind everybody, it's this actual film on film.
Yeah.
Was it 16 millimeter?
I believe it's 16
Yeah,
millimeter,
16 millimeter taken, you know, a long time ago. 60, oh gosh, I forgot, 72 was it? Yeah. Something like that. Anyway, it's on film, and either it's the best footage ever of a video, or it's obviously a guy in a suit. Because you hear people say, have been saying for 50 years, either one or the two. But one thing that skeptics have brought up is that, oh my gosh, it's been 50 years. We have a billion people roaming around with HD 4K cameras in their phones. Why have we never gotten a single video that rivals this 30 seconds or a minute or so back from the 70s, right? Why?
Exactly.
Why? And now, this is again where low effort ruins everything. How is anybody going to convince anybody of a Bigfoot video in the era of AI video?
Exactly.
Right? I mean, even if I do not accept that there is a Bigfoot, that there is a Sasquatch. I just don't, you know, okay. Now there's no way to convince me, ever, unless you bring a body in.
Exactly. Yeah. All right. We should wrap. We should
No
wrap
video will
up.
ever work
Okay.
to convince a skeptic, ever,
All right.
anymore.
All right. We should wrap up because, you know, the
Yeah.
Blue Jays game's coming on shortly.
Okay.
Got to run out and get
But
some
anyway,
food.
thank you, Carl.
Wait,
I
let me
think,
just one last final question. Sorry. And let's keep it brief because, you know, I gotta watch the Blue Jays lose the World Series. Not proving your confidence, but heard it here first, kids. Where do you see this going? Like, is it's not gonna ever get better. How worse is this gonna get?
I guess I have some fundamental faith that people want, at the end of the day, even if they produce low effort, they want high effort. Like people want to be married to a real wonderful person who loves them and that they can have long conversations with. You know, they're real, right? But I do believe that there will be a permanent, I think that the term underclass is an accurate one. There'll be a permanent subset of society that is addicted, and I think we're talking about the same pleasure centers in the brain as cocaine or alcohol or any addiction that is addicted to the validation and gratification that low effort relationships, low effort research, low effort reading gives them. And you know, we'll have to sort those things out. I worry about those people, but at the end of the day, everybody has to make their own choices.
That's an excellent point. It's here to stay, deal with it, but try to be the auteur versus the consumer of slop, I guess.
And I'm going to go work on an AI video of the Blue Jays scoring 50 runs in one inning.
Thank you.
And I'll send it to you. And I guess I can get higher ratings than the actual series if I do that, right? In
Exactly.
Canada.
All right, then. Thank you. Thank you, Doctor. I will let you
Thank
go.
you.
All right. Go
Enjoy. Take care, sir.
Jays or go Dodgers or somebody. All
Go
right.
Dodgers.
All right. Bye-bye.
weather. Before we go to work, we'll plan the day ahead. We'll while away the working day together. Work all day or work all night, it's all the same. If you want to play, some are nurses, some still nurses, some are workers, some are not. Yes, it's time for a party, liberation for the nation now.